Welcome to Morning Invest on this Taco Tuesday. It is December 14th. You've only got nine Christmas shopping days left. We've got a jam-packed show for you on this Morning Invest. Today, we're going to talk about Civil War, number of high-profile members of the media and prognosticators and financial analysts are saying that we are, in fact, maybe already in a civil war or are heading towards a civil war in the United States.
And certain factory members were not allowed to leave during the deadly tornadoes that ripped through the nation. We're going to discuss that as well.
Yeah. And no more failed grades. Hey, kids, you don't have to worry about getting D's or F's anymore. We'll tell you what schools have gone woke and decide to get rid of failure. All of that and more. It's time to get uncomfortable. That's the kind of show we do here. You know, if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. That's Morning Invest, and it starts right now. All right, welcome into Morning Invest. Hope everyone is doing well on this Tuesday. Please sign up for our free daily newsletter by going to morninginvest.com. We publish it first thing in the morning so you can be more informed over your oatmeal, over your cup of coffee, and we also try to make you laugh a little bit. And we've got some free giveaway stuff, too, in the newsletter. We're giving away Grover mugs and some other things in there as well.
And McDonald's food.
Oh, yeah, we got some free McDonald's food stories in the newsletter today.
Right, we are not giving it away. Mariah Carey is.
Right.
It's kind of confusing, but you can learn how to get some if that's your bag.
Yeah, I don't quite
understand. Go easy on it. Rewind to yesterday's show where we talk about immunity.
Right.
But at least it's there if you want it.
Well, we do have a jam-packed show for you coming up. We're going to get to all of these stories. But first, I want to do your news roundup and give you the news headlines that are making waves across the country. And wow, we got some unbelievable details this morning about what was happening inside the White House on the afternoon of January 6th during the Capitol attack on the Capitol building. First, the Congressional Committee investigating the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol is one step closer this morning to holding former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows in contempt of Congress over his refusal to answer questions about this attack. Now, the committee's chair, Representative Benny Thompson of Mississippi, yesterday said that Mark Meadows started out doing the right thing. Like, he started out doing the right thing by giving over tons of documents, but he said that's not enough. He now needs to come and answer our questions. Here's what Benny Thompson had to say about this situation.
The Select Committee's report referring Mr. Meadows for criminal contempt charges is clear and compelling. As White House Chief of Staff, Mr. Meadows played a role in or was witness to key events leading up to and including the January 6th assault on the United States Capitol.
The bipartisan panel, they're now going to start to dig through this because they voted 9-0 yesterday, and they're going to send it to the full House of Representatives today. It's likely to be voted on later this afternoon, and they're going to ask the Justice Department to prosecute Mark Meadows. Meanwhile, though, we got to read a whole bunch of text messages yesterday. Did you read these text messages? They're pretty stunning. And they say that Mark Meadows received these text messages from lawmakers and allies and friends on or around January 6th. One of the text messages was about the Capitol Police, saying basically that they would be ready, and they would be ready to protect pro-Trump protesters. That was sent on January 5th. Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming, the committee's vice chair, read text messages, said that they were from Fox News host Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, Brian Kilmeade of Fox and Friends, begging Mark Meadows to get President Trump to end the violence on January 6th. Like, this has got to stop, they were asking him to do. We now know that Trump ignored those requests. Even from his own son, Don Jr., sent multiple text messages to Mark Meadows begging his father to take action. Quote, here's the one of the text messages from Don Jr. It said, he's got to condemn this S ASAP. The Capitol Police tweet is not enough, he said. We need an Oval Office address. He has to lead now. It's gone too far and gotten out of hand. This is a stunning development for Mark Meadows, by the way, because Mark Meadows would be the, no former White House Chief of Staff has faced criminal charges since H.R. Haldeman, who was indicted for his role in the Watergate scandal nearly 50 years ago. So we will see what happens in the House of Representatives today. Meanwhile, how bad has inflation gotten in the United States, and what can we do to actually stop it? That's the top agenda for the federal officials who are going to be meeting today for the first time since Chairman Powell has been renominated as the Fed chair. The markets are sitting on pins and needles this morning as we await the market open to seeing what the Fed is going to do, because the Dow futures were down this morning, and it looks like it's going to be quite a crap show because we don't exactly know what's going to happen with the Fed, although we will get to hear from them saying that we think that they were wrong. They're going to admit that they were wrong about inflation, that inflation is not going away anytime soon. Instead of using the term transitory, they're getting rid of the term transitory as if like we just have like some short.
They just started using that word. That word was supposed to make us feel better.
I know. But then now
too
they're getting rid of it.
People figured it out.
Oh,
that's the thing. Like so many people like had it in their heads. And now like we can't use that term anymore. So we're going to now switch it up. We're going to switch it up a little bit. And it's going to be simply that he's going to simply describe the forces contributing to higher inflation, but they're not going to use the word transitory anymore.
Okay.
Because they're going to basically admit, hey, we were wrong. And, you know, inflation is here to stay for a couple more years.
Okay.
Good on that.
Insert causes of our own doing.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
The Federal Reserve is expected to wind down their bond buying stimulus program, which has been propping up Wall Street. Once it does that, then it will consider raising interest rates. So we have a timeline, according to the Wall Street Journal this morning, we're likely to start seeing them do this tapering process in March and then raising interest rates around the spring of 2022. So get ready for higher interest rates, but also get ready for long-term inflation. That's where we're at right now. And where are we this morning on the Build Back Better stimulus plan? That's a question. Here's the very latest on that front, on the stimulus front. Really, one of the biggest sticking points right now is around these $3,600 child tax credit checks. Also, another big sticking point is around the state and local tax deductions, the SALT deductions. First, let's start with this. Every single day, we hear about new disagreements and hurdles in the Build Back Better process. So Senate Finance Chairman, Committee Chairman Ron Wyden of Oregon said in the Capitol on Monday that there are 20 issues that he's litigating right now with the Senate parliamentarian. There's 20 things. That's a lot of stuff. So do you think we're going to see a vote before Christmas? I mean, that 20 things that they need to iron out with the Senate parliamentarian, whether or not they can even put this bill before the Senate to vote on it. Maybe the Senate parliamentarian is going to say, no, guys, you can't even bring this stimulus vote up for a vote at all. We still haven't gotten a final judgment on the immigration provisions that are in there. And then Bernie Sanders and Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey continue to disagree on that SALT tax cap. So, you know, all of those like New Jersey, Massachusetts, New York, they're all like sitting there waiting. Are they going to end up being able to write off these tax deductions, the wealthy folks that live in those states? So that's all still up in the air. This would also have to be settled in order to move forward. So that needs to be on the table and ironed out. It's not yet. And Christmas is creeping up here. Joe Manchin still sounds skeptical about getting a bill done this year. On Monday, Manchin said he's still engaged in talks and plans to speak with President Joe Biden again this week. He said anything is possible when asked if they can get something passed this month. And maybe that's true. We don't know. But he's basically saying, I don't think we're going to have anything before the end of the year. We'll probably be able to pass a stimulus maybe next year if we're lucky.
Did we really think they would?
No, I mean, I had hoped that because of the momentum that we got from that last round of stimulus, that at least they passed the infrastructure and they were moving towards that. I thought maybe they would actually move quickly, maybe the next week. That was the goal. Remember, Nancy Pelosi was supposed to do it like the following week?
Yeah.
And they didn't. They didn't do that at all. And of course, the sticking, you know, it's this guy, Joe Manchin.
Yes.
So if Senate Democrats want to move to the floor next week, Christmas week, then the parliamentarian needs to wrap up her review this week. Once the bill hits the floor, we expect approximately 4 days of legislative wrangling. So if we don't see a bill on the floor by Tuesday, a week from today, passage before Christmas is unlikely. And of course, the Senate then could take off Christmas Eve and Christmas and come back the following week to wrap up before New Year's Eve. But the chances of them coming off vacation are not strong. There's also time. There's a little time for that to be done. Schumer has pushed his colleagues on the child tax credit, which expires on December 31st. Again, that's a big sticking point. The House will be on recess and can be recalled quickly once the Senate passes a bill. I'm not hopeful that we will see a stimulus passing before the end of the year, but those are the two main sticking points. Those $3,600 child tax credits, the SALT deductions, SALT tax cap and repeal, and immigration. That's also in there. So those three, I guess you could say. And finally, in the news, this is a stunning bit of UFO news this morning. Is this a crashed UFO on the surface of Mars? These NASA images are causing a huge buzz online. South African researcher Gene Ward made the weird discovery when he was looking through photos taken by the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. This photo was taken back in December of 2006. But somehow NASA just ignores these images. I don't know why they do it. They do it when they have rovers on the planets. They ignore when they see certain things on the surface. They turn the rovers the opposite way. But what? Look at this. The image may be 15 years old, but the researcher's fresh examination of the picture uncovered a curious scene which has been hiding in plain sight for all of these years. They have
They got to push this now because of the Space Force. They're starting to build the fear factor.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they held it for their own reasons.
Yeah. I mean, they're just sitting on this.
We're going to need that. So.
Well, yeah, the Space Force and this new Pentagon program that was just announced, shoved inside of the Defense Authorization Act last week that we mm-hmm. reported about. But this is amazing because it shows a rounded edge, distinctly rounded edge can be seen half buried in the Martian dirt, along with a long streak behind it, indicating that whatever it is looks to be around 40 to 50 feet in diameter. So Gene Ward theorized that this could be some kind of disc-shaped ship that hit the surface of Mars at a low angle and skipped across. Alternatively, he also said that the strange streak behind the peculiar shape might be indicative of a ramp leading to an underground entrance.
To me, it looks like somebody lost their Frisbee disc, like they were playing disc golf.
It's not still there. It doesn't look like that is whatever it is still there. It looks like a... The round part at the end looks like maybe something made the impression, but didn't stay there.
Like it got up or like it was something removed it.
Or just like, you know,
I think it looks amazing.
A little fast pass, what do you call them? A touch and go is what they call them.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know how my dad is a pilot and sometimes they have to practice touch and goes, which just means they circle around, they land and they come back up and then they circle around and they land. So maybe they were practicing mm-hmm. touch and goes.
Frederick in our chat says Chuck Norris threw a Frisbee and that's where it landed. Chuck Norris. There are your news headlines on this Monday. It's time to deep dive some news now, right?
Okay.
Yes.
Sure. All right. So is America headed for a civil war? Some new data shows that that is possible, particularly data around the sentiment between various populations and disagreement amongst... Oh, I don't know. I can name a bunch of things. The 2020 election, the mm-hmm. January 6th riots, abortion at this Supreme Court again. What are you trying to say?
Well, I just want to ask you a question. So are they saying like a civil war that's going to be more like weaponized, you know, using actual weapons? Because I feel like we've been in an ideological civil war for a decade at least.
Well, I mean, specifically what Charles Blow is writing about here in this New York Times piece, that we're edging closer to a civil war, is basically saying that, you know, the like civil wars are, well, especially the United States Civil War, started around, of course, the disagreement over slavery. You know, you can talk about it being states' rights issue, but it was at the core of it was slavery, right? And so what kind of an issue could divide us in much the same way as slavery? And he makes the argument that it's abortion.
Uh-huh.
And that once in 2022, when Roe v. Wade is overturned, and by all accounts, that's going to happen. The Supreme Court clearly is leaning that direction, it seems, from those oral arguments. And even liberals are saying, we lost this one. Like, this one's done. And then immediately, once that happens, you have states that immediately bounce into action and pass laws outlawing it in their states. Then you already have this massive ideological rift, as David's talking about across the country. But really, his issue specifically is around abortion. And, you know, we've been talking about this book, we've been reading, this War on Small Business. But one of the details that Carol Roth lays out in that book is about how many of the northern states pay, basically subsidize some of the southern states.
Yes, very much though.
Right. So like New York, I mean, the amount of money that a citizen pays into taxes in New York, they don't get it back.
So yes, the way that she explains it is that citizens pay a certain threshold of tax, and obviously certain high tax states are paying more. That tax is sent up to the federal government, but the federal government only spends so much per person when it allocates that money back to the states. And right now, when we're the way we're looking at many social programs, from landlord assistance to rental assistance to anything that's been within the last 2 years in any social stimulus bill, it's funneled back through the states, but it does not get funneled evenly. It's not split apart by 50. That wouldn't make sense because populations are different in different states, but it's also not split by population. So like if we all went to dinner, right, and we said, let's split the bill evenly, that makes sense. That's not how it happens. The way it goes now is certain states get back, let's say, 10,000 per person. Some states get back just a couple hundred per person, but the average person is paying more than that, right? So the average person is paying upwards of $12,000-$13,000 in taxes in, say, New York, New Jersey, but the state only gets back $9,000 or $10,000, right? Whereas other states may have a lower average income tax payment, but get back more. It doesn't really make sense. It would make sense if, say, you know how you pay for things for your children, like how many children there are mine. I brought 3 children, so I'll pay this per head. It doesn't work that way. It mm-hmm. just doesn't.
But I think the abortion part of this is really fascinating. And because if you think about the Civil War being across a border, you know, yes, like Mason-Dixon line, right? This wouldn't be that way. It wouldn't just be the South versus the North. It would be, you know, it would be California. I mean, there's liberals that have been calling for California to secede from the Union, make its own country, secede. And there'd be a lot of right wingers that would love that.
Yes.
Get California out of here.
You know,
get this crazy California out of here. I think it's a really compelling argument. Ray Dalio has written about it in his new book, and it's a really, really fascinating take on what he sees happening on the idea of a civil war. Listen.
Write something alarming in the book. You see a 30% chance that there could be what you call a civil war here sometime in the next decade. Is that a metaphor? Are you talking about actual conflict? What do you mean by civil war, and how might that play out?
What I mean by civil war is the not following the rules, the Constitution, the rules, agreeing by those rules, and having a power conflict that can take its various forms. What history taught me is that when the causes that people are behind are more important to them than the system is in jeopardy. And so as we go into the 2022 elections, for example, I think you're going to see the move to greater polarity in the primaries and so on, and you're going to see that intensification happen. And I think it's not surprising now that people are questioning whether rules of who is elected and whether the rules will govern. And I think that there's a good chance, and we're seeing it now, of the movements of people to different states in which, you know, certain types of people will go, the rich probably will go to states where they're more comfortable and so on. And that creates questions of how even the federal government will deal with the states. I do believe there's a risk, a significant risk, that the rule book of how to agree will not be the means by which that's decided, such as, for example, sanctuary cities or something. You send a rule down, and they say, and a state or a city might say no, and then it will be power that will determine how that goes down. So it's that kind of civil war that I'm worried about. I'm worried about working well together to be productive. I'm worried about the extremism rather than the moderation of a one country working in a healthy way.
Okay, but we have in history seen power systems break up in this way, for instance, the USSR, and that ended up being a good thing for some states that became independent.
I mean, so, could you imagine, a country where we have 50 countries instead of 50 states?
I mean, it would look like Europe.
Right.
And who is why that? Is that terrible?
Who was that guy? He looks like Mr. Roper, but who is that guy?
Ray Dalio. A famous investor, multi-billionaire, famous investor. He wrote a New York Times best-selling book called Principles a number of years ago that was a huge bestseller. He's been very, very accurate on economic crises in the United States over the years. He's a very successful investor, but he also, he's an investor in China. We were railing against him a few weeks ago here about his position on what was happening
in
China.
That's right.
People pay attention to him. When he talks about these social fabrics, I mean, people pay attention to Ray Dalio, and I do. I think he's a very brilliant guy. It's worth discussing that. But yeah, let's go back to that question. I mean, think about that. Would it be so bad if we had 50 countries instead of 50 states?
My knee-jerk reaction is no, I don't care that much about being part of the same system as people who live a 6-hour flight away from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't feel like that would, I'd have to think about it more. This is my knee-jerk reaction.
Think about the state of Texas, right? Texas has wanted to do this for forever, right? Texas would be thrilled with it, right? They're building, no state income tax. They've incentivized business growth. All of these businesses are moving there. Keep your hands off my government. Keep your hands off my land.
Yes.
Don't mess with Texas.
Well, and like you said, it'd be a lot like Europe because you would have different states that had different benefits that you'd be like, ooh, like Denmark. Ooh, they have healthcare in Florida. I think I'm gonna move to Florida to get healthcare and better taxes for my business.
And then actually the states can compete on their own ideological standards, but also on business standards too. Texas is saying, hey, guys, we're crypto friendly. We are tax friendly. We don't have state tax. And so people move into Texas for these specific reasons. It's who's open for business and who's not.
Right?
Like the same thing is happening all over the world. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you look at like the Balkans, for instance, right? Like, so you have favorable countries for business in the Balkans, like Montenegro, that thought, hey, how do we compete on the world stage? Well, we will make it really, banker friendly. You can open a bank account. You can business friendly, zero, business taxes, et cetera. I don't think it's zero, but close. All sorts of incentives for businesses and people to move to Montenegro to do business, but then neighboring Serbia, not so favorable.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, and they were part of the same block. So you choices, right? So you might say, hey, I want to move to Tennessee and I'm an automaker. I'm going to move there because of low taxes. Maybe the labor is better. And you have all these different disparate ideas. And then New York won't have to subsidize Tennessee. I think it's a compelling argument.
We have this pain point because we somehow believe that we need the federal government in order to protect us from what? Or, would the United States then be more vulnerable to attack if we were just a conglomerate of different member states like the European Union? Well, there would be less threat in the world. We would have less we would have less ability to bully other countries, which then would make other countries want to attack us less, right? Because our global power, that's something we absolutely don't want to do.
You'd have states that would be putting up borders and everything, like we don't want other people in here.
Walls.
Yeah.
But I think this New York Times piece specifically that Charles Blow writes, and it's a well-written piece, and he says he's comparing it to what we saw with the Civil War in the 1800s in 1861 when the war broke out with President Lincoln at the helm at the time. He sees similarities and then dissimilarities here, because what he's saying specifically is that in some cases, the abortion battle now being waged in the court is a test case. Can the states make an argument that a civil right can be reversed on the state level? Can they make the case that all that the Constitution has not explicitly spelled out should be reserved for the states? The Constitution has been silent on quite a bit since it was written in 1787, and the last time it was amended was nearly 30 years ago. So what he's saying is really the only way we could get to solving this abortion issue would be with an amendment to the Constitution, an actual constitutional amendment allowing this to happen. And there's just no way that's going to happen. When are you going to get 2/3 majority
right
for that to happen? And he says all of us should be very worried about what we see happening with these abortion cases, not just women who might need abortions or relatives and friends of women who might need them. We should worry about whether or not we are at an inflection point for an age of regression.
Or we can think about what an actual revolution looks like, right? It is possible in the modern world. If you look at Portugal, their revolution of flowers was not bloody. It was one government system overthrown with, yes, people died, but it was
very minimal.
Relatively few compared to other overturnings of government in history. This quote from The War on Small Business, the book we've been mentioning, by an Idaho representative, Brett Rayburn, really has me thinking. He says people are too willing to overlook all of the bad in the system so they don't have to forego the small benefits they receive. And I feel like that was a punch in the gut to me, because we think that we need the federal government for these specific reasons. And so we allow all kinds of bad behavior, all kinds of mismanagement of our own money, all kinds of the story this morning in the newsletter, how President Biden yesterday signed an executive order to enhance customer service for Americans, meaning if you call Social Security or Medicare or the IRS, most of the time you get nobody. There is no customer service. They don't treat us like a customer. They treat us like a slave. And now he's saying you can actually sign up for a callback sometime. I mean, it may be 2 weeks when you get that callback in the middle of the night, but they're going to at least give you an option. Because right now, if you call, for instance, we had a tax issue, a refund that I was calling on, and it was for a different year that you couldn't look up anymore in their system. And I was calling and calling and said, nobody can take your call right now. Bye. Click. I was like, well, then what?
America.
What
is, and by the way, didn't they hire 4,000 additional people during the pandemic to handle phone calls? I mean, they can't answer the phone. But Apple can do this. Like, if you call Apple customer service and they'll like, you want to schedule a call back, you know, and they'll call you back, like, we'll call you back in 20 minutes. And sure enough, the phone rings like 20 minutes later, you know, like
who?
Apple.
I never choose that option. That bothers me so much when they're like, we'll call you back. I'm like, no, girl, I'll hold.
They're like, you can either wait 20 minutes or we'll call you back.
I always choose
to
wait because I don't trust anybody.
Yeah, I'll literally go down to her office and I hear hold music for hours. I'm like, who are you on hold with? She's like the IRS or somebody. Who knows? You know, David, go ahead, sir.
I got a question. So don't you feel, though, in like Portugal and Iceland, like the people are a lot more united? They're not ideologically like polar opposites like we are here in the United States. I feel like any kind of revolution would be impossible without a civil war first here to weed out the people that are, you know what I mean? Like we're just so divided.
What do you mean weed them out? Like we have to kill them first?
No. I mean, you have to deal with the ideological thing first. Like we have to get over that and everybody come to the middle before we could work on the main government.
But it helps the government that there are so many fissures over different issues. Just for instance, yesterday in the newsletter, we had a story about how, you know, the president held this big democracy summit and saying like, we're great at democracy. Everybody else should do it too. And it was like just a speech that rang hollow because no one really cared. And it was a virtual conference, but there was no one like, yes, the United States, very good. We're going to emulate you. Right. And right. So we're, as Philip pointed out last week, we are mansplaining democracy to the rest of the world.
Right.
And we're not doing it so great ourselves. And there are some who are, for instance, this Steve Bannon project to get more people to become election counters for 2024. And now election boards in Republican states say that they have an overwhelming amount of people who now want to sign up to count the votes, not to help take votes. They want to be vote counters because they did not trust the way that votes were counted before. So there's that, like all elections are stolen and some people are going to die on that hill. There's abortion. Some people will die on that hill. There's this gun control, right? It's just, there's so many people in too many small different groups that if there were one issue like abortion, I don't really think that this will be the dividing issue, but
Thing, like in this country, we vote by singular issue, and we vote party. Like there's no, you know, like there's no, a lot of people, they plant their flag and they don't want to move on their one issue at all. Like if that, if one person doesn't support their main issue, like they can be 90% what they would want in a candidate, but if they don't support that one issue, they're not going to vote for them. So it's like, we have to start being more, like less focused on individual things and look at the whole, because that's the thing. Like we're, if, unless we all look at the whole, which is the federal government, that's like when I went to Occupy Wall Street, I went to Occupy Washington because I was like, the Occupy Wall Street people, they're in the wrong place. You're not at the root of the problem. The root is the government. The Wall Street is the way it is because of the government. So that fight needs to happen in Washington, not in New York.
Right. This idea that there's this like take down capitalism, like capitalism is a natural force in many different, like even indigenous societies, right? Like,
oh yeah, I've always
who gathers like the most rabbit or whatever are the one that, I'm sorry, that was an ignorant statement, the one that people come to the most, right? Who has the most rabbit fur or whatever. It's not about capitalism, and it's just like a fun, sexy thing that people say on their Instagram, like, we must destroy capitalism. No, it's actually central planning that's perverting the natural forces of capitalism.
In this piece, I just want to kind of go back to, because the fact that the New York Times is discussing civil war is a pretty, I mean, it's a pretty strong statement. But I think he makes the point, because David asked earlier, or will you see gun violence, you know, is this going to be like war where young men going? And he makes the point in this article, it's not going to be like the Civil War of the 1800s. It's going to be instead obvious differences. He says the Civil War I see is not the kind that would leave hundreds of thousands of young men dead in combat. This is not to say that we aren't seeing spates of violence, but rather that this new war is going to be fought in the courts. It'll be fought in the state houses and, as you were just talking about, the ballot boxes, rather than in the fields. And this war won't only be about the subjugation of black people, but also about the subjugation of all who challenge the white racist patriarchy.
Well, if we actually had investigative journalists in the media, they actually could be the revolution. You know, the revolution could happen in the media if they shone a light so that people that were singular issue focused saw what really happens, that these people do not work for them. Like if the media would draw attention to that, that could be the revolution, but that never happened. But I think for us, it would be easier to infiltrate the media than the government.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'd love to hear our thoughts from our viewers in the comments about this. Do you think we're in a civil war right now? Do you think we're going to see a full-blown civil war in the future? And do you agree with Ray Dalio? Let me know in the comments. We've got a lot more news to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about the horrible conditions during those tornadoes and what workers had to go through and being told that, hey, if you leave these buildings, you're going to be fired. We'll tell you where that happened. We've got so much more to get to on the show. But first, I'm going to tell us about our show sponsor today.
Okay, sure. All right, so we're going to talk about shipping. Of course, shipping is something top of mind for anybody during the holiday season. But if you're running an online store and you're trying to fulfill orders, that can be a nightmare this time of year, especially with delays in the postal service or backlogs in any shipping service. That's where ShipStation comes in. If you're stressed, you have inventory to manage, orders to fill, and a growing list of customers checking in twice a day, wondering where their things are, if it's going to arrive on time, that's where ShipStation comes in. They take the hassle out of holiday shipping and holiday order fulfillment, leaving you with happier customers and more freedom to run your business. Of course, you know shipping can be frustrating. There's a lot of logistics, especially with discussing things with your clients. This is a back-end system that automates all of that so that you don't have to worry. Easy way for your customers to track order status, easy way for you to communicate with them about order status. This is workable with any sales channel, either Amazon, eBay, Etsy, your own website. It will automate just about any shipping task, all from one easy to use dashboard. Changing your shipping solution can seem daunting, but with the holidays here, now you want to make a change so that everything is easier. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, international and local, of course, including FedEx, UPS, and USPS, and you even get access to discounted rates that are only usually reserved for the big guys. the Fortune 500 companies. So make this holiday season a little bit brighter with ShipStation. Right now, you can use our offer code INVEST to get a 60-day free trial. Just enough time to handle the holiday rush. So go to ShipStation.com. Click on that microphone there at the top and enter code INVEST. ShipStation helps you make ship happen.
All right, thank you. All right, let's talk about what happened. I mean, we're learning, excuse me, take two. Troubling details are emerging about the working conditions at the Amazon facility that was leveled during the tornadoes down south. And not just Amazon facilities, but multiple other factories, which also saw workers killed as a result. And unbelievable stories now emerging about some of these factory workers say that they were threatened with being with firing if they left before the tornado. And some of this happened because there was a bunch of tornadoes. There was multiple warnings about them, right? So the alarms go off and ring, and then there's space between that time where they asked if they could go home. Because now we know that these tornadoes are coming. Can we get out of here? These things are made of almost like aluminum foil, these factories, you know, these warehouses, right? They're just, they rip apart and they're blown away like paper in the wind. So obviously they were concerned about their safety.
I mean, living in a tornado area, I mean, I can understand like why they would think it was more dangerous to leave. Cause like you, even if driving a car, they could have been in more danger. You know what I mean? Like I can kind of understand them not wanting,
but it wasn't for their safety. Let's be clear. It wasn't about their safety. In fact, It was about productivity. Like it was about churning out product. It was about bottom lines for these companies. And listen to how one of the described this factory situation, as one reporter puts it.
Then, and when the second siren had came, and that's when a lot of the employees there had asked to go home. So we're talking to 15 employees. That's on the low end, possibly up to 40, but I'll just call it 15 for now. But who have asked, listen, it's getting dangerous outside. We're worried for our lives. Can we go home? And they said, well, yes, but if you do, you know, don't bother coming back.
That's unbelievable.
So interestingly enough, that right now lawmakers are debating legislation that would make it illegal for a company, for an employee to sue their company if they were terminated based on physical safety. That means this law has not passed yet, but lawmakers are hoping to, and lobbyists are working hard on it. That means if you are one of those people who was fired because you left during a deadly tornado, you could then sue the company. That is not law right now. So these employees and their families absolutely now can and probably will litigate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about the 8 people died at the Mayfield Consumer Products, the candle factory, which makes those scented candles. The facility was wiped away, completely leveled. All that is left is rubble. There's photos and videos of, you know, mangled remains of houses there, ripped apart, ripped to shreds. And these people had asked to go home. Like, we want to get out of here because this is not a safe place. On some Amazon message boards internally, weeks ago, there were, or no, not weeks ago, just in the aftermath of this, there were questions about, hey, we should have a protocol here because, you know, we don't, what happens if something comes through here? We should have like an in-house protocol because we don't have any plan if there's a siren.
How can that be? OSHA exists.
Well, it's not about OSHA. It's about
when you live in Tornado Alley. I mean,
right. I mean, so there was a poster, a person who wrote this on the Amazon internal message boards from Indiana. And there was a tornado warning. There was a tornado warning just the other day. And they said, you know, what do we do? Like, what's our situation here? Like, what do we exactly do? We don't have any sort of internal protocol here at Amazon. Like, should we have something that we can take care of if this happens? I mean, it's a scary situation. I mean, just look at this. I just feel awful for these people who, you know, they were told they can't go home. And if they go home, they're going to be fired.
But going home, they could have met the same fate. I mean, there's no way to know that. You know what I mean? And the thing is, like, if they had no protocol whatsoever and like no safe spot in there, like for tornadoes or whatever, it's not like they left them at their said keep working, right?
Yeah, they told him, they said specifically, like, if you go home, you're fired.
But they didn't stop them from working. Like, or, I mean, they didn't keep them working. Did they all go?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the whole point of this, right? That's the whole concern, is that they were being told, no, you got to keep working. And specifically with Amazon.
That's the part I didn't.
I mean, specifically with Amazon. You know, these Amazon workers were barred from abandoning their job site, and they were threatened with termination if they fled. And these corporate lobbying groups were fighting legislation in the months ahead of this that protected them, that would have protected them before this tornado disaster. So
I just feel like if they would have let everybody leave, they said, okay, you all go home, and then like 30 of those people died, then they would have been like, this company let these people leave when they should have like stood up or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
they would have probably spun that the other way.
But I get that, but it's not their decision. Like, if, right. You know, individual rights and freedoms in the United States, right? That's what this country is founded on. If I feel safer, like, leaving this paper mache warehouse of Amazon, and I'm going to go to my, at my house 2 miles away, I have a storm cellar that would protect me and my family.
Well,
you know, I want to go there or be with my family.
Yeah, I think what would happen, though, is if, let's say that did happen, that scenario played out, they just said, you know what, I don't care if I lose my job, I'm going to leave anyway. And then they got home, and then this disaster happened, then the company would be like, wow, we didn't know it was going to be this bad, we're sorry. Like I said, if I wanted to leave, I would have just left.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, if you want to leave, you could leave, but you'd be fired. That's the thing, right? So you and I have the opportunity, like, we're going to get out of here for our own safety. And the bosses are saying, if you leave, you will be fired. Do not bother coming back. Like, you're using this as an opportunity to wimp out, not get out of work and go home because it's a tornado. So you don't want to work. I get it. Just an alarm. We get these alarms all the time. So you got to keep working. It's really, really troubling. And take a look at this. This is a text message from a husband who worked at the Amazon facility, texted his wife. He said he was fueling up his car ahead of like some storms. He says, he texts his wife and says, well, I will be home after the storm. He texts his wife and she writes, what do you mean? And he says, well, Amazon won't let us leave. And she says, all it's doing is lightning here. And then he's killed. And she doesn't hear back from him. And so she keeps texting him. So what are you doing? I hope everything is okay. At this point, he'd already been killed at the Amazon facility. And she texts, I love you.
I thought Amazon workers were not allowed to have their phones. Did they change that policy?
I don't know. But this is, I mean, it's horrifying details about this. These Amazon workers, that was the Amazon warehouse in Illinois where 6 workers were killed on the job. This is Larry Verdon, who texted his girlfriend, it was his girlfriend, that Amazon won't let us leave. In many of these states, corporate interests, as David Sirota writes, have preserved at-will employment laws in both Kentucky and Illinois that allow employers to fire workers for no cause. But earlier this year, Illinois lawmakers introduced legislation to protect workers from these firings, but the bill has been stuck. It only had 15 sponsors in the state. So awful. I mean, but just think, like, you have to worry about, okay, if I leave, I'm going to be fired, but I might live.
Right. And will I sue if I'm fired? You know, do I even have, you have to think, a lot of these workers don't think that they're empowered to sue. They can't afford expensive lawyers. And so they feel powerless. Obviously, it's the holidays.
Well, and if there was 40 of them, I mean, that would be a mutiny and just leave, you know, if it was that many people. Like, nope, because like then the company would be like 40 people out of how many that they'd have to rehire.
Yeah,
I'd have just left.
You know, in the heart of all of this, though, I mean, I think what really smacks of just elitism is what Jeff Bezos was doing at the time. When this was unfolding, he was blasting into space or having, you know, like promoting the blasting into space of like Michael Strahan and all this stuff. So while this is happening on Friday night, you know, a massive tornado ripping through several states, killing scores of people, hundreds missing, including Amazon employees at a warehouse. Even during the rescue and search and rescue operations were ongoing, Jeff Bezos couldn't be bothered about his warehouse. Chris Liebenthal writes, much less the employees who were working there at the time of the tornado hit. He was too busy celebrating the third launch of his flying phallus that can only hit suborbital heights. It was only 6 hours later that Bezos could muster up the time and interest to mention the six Amazon employees that had died the night before. There you go.
Thanks for those thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, thanks. Helpful. Thanks for that tweet 6 hours later, the next day.
Helpful.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. Well, we've got more news to get to here on the show.
Well, Jeff Bezos gets an F at that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about grades in general, because some school districts in California have decided that they are going to ditch the A through F system and instead move towards more progressive grades that would allow students to be graded on whether or not they mastered certain. Why are you sighing like this? You think this is woke?
It's totally,
already your attitude is.
It's woke. I mean, that's what it is. Like, oh, we can't.
Everybody gets a trophy.
Everyone gets a trophy.
That's not what that is.
Yeah,
you're making a judgment on this without actually thinking of the merits of it.
Okay, what I feel is that it's, you know, you're removing D's and F's. That's the move, right? You're removing D's and F's so you can't fail. Mm-hmm. So you can't fail, and then you'll have to go back and show mastery, right? The idea is called mastery-based learning.
Yes.
And they're saying it's a way to improve equity.
Okay. I want to point out to you that this is the system that our kids currently use.
I was watching Yellowstone last night. You know, the show Yellowstone.
Have you even seen our kids' report cards?
I've seen them.
They are proficient, not proficient, needs or developing and mastery. They do not get letter grades.
All right.
And so
I don't like it.
Do we go to a woke school then?
I don't like it.
Why don't you like it? Because when our child is struggling with something, for instance, I've seen this happen. I watch very carefully, specifically how our children learn math. And they do study Common Core math. And Common Core math is graded not on the answer you get, but how you got around to that answer. So I will see many times that my child has... the final answer is wrong because one of the steps they made some mistake somewhere, like you subtracted this wrong, like maybe you took 9 from 2 and you got 9 instead of 7 or something, like some small mistake that then leads them to the wrong answer because there was an error inside the steps. And they don't get it wrong. The teacher understands, like, this is the step you got wrong, so it's not wrong, but you took all the right steps. So then they will still be graded the fact that they understand the concept. They're not failed on a small mistake like this. And if they constantly are making those mistakes, then they let them try again because you have no proficiency with the subject. So go ahead. What's so wrong with that?
It's wrong because that's not how we as a society operate.
Yes, it absolutely is. In the workplace, if you fail at something, you can try again.
Okay, in the workplace.
In life, in general. No, absolutely. You can fail at something and try again.
Last night, Ava was playing Super Mario Brothers, right? And she's like, oh, Daddy, it was so frustrating. I died and I had to start all over again. I'm like, sorry. You got to get better
at
it.
That is absolutely this.
Go back and start over again.
That's what this is.
Well, how's that different than getting a failed grade? Like, okay, you got an F on this test.
It's the same as you have. You're not proficient in it. So do it again.
But getting rid of failure, like, okay, you can get an A through C, but you can't have a D
failure
or an F.
Failure is finite. It means you're done, right? You failed. You don't. And how many kids then would be like, well, I'm not going to pass
this?
That's
not at all. Why is failure finite?
In the school system, absolutely, that's how it works.
No. Like if you're skiing, for instance, right?
We're talking about grades, though. When you fail something, for instance, unit-based learning, where you have, let's say, in the first semester, you're going to do math lessons, unit 1 through 10. And if you fail module 1, the school still moves you on to module 2. Even if you failed in this system, if you fail module 1, you don't move up to module 2 because that's wasting everybody's time. So you do again module 1 because you are not proficient. The problem with No Child Left Behind is that it only was interested in raising test scores and raising grades, but there's no standards for grading, especially in, you could get one fourth grade teacher who grades on a curve and the other one doesn't. You could get one fourth grade teacher who rarely gives F's and one that's totally fine to give F's. And it's the luck of the draw, and it's not at all interested in you learning. Anytime learning is scaled to this massive size, right, some things are gonna fit fall through the cracks. But the point behind this is to make sure that people are graded on something, that it's not like you fail, but we're still moving on to module two, even though you can't do module one. That person's going to be behind forever.
But does that person still progress? So let's say for me, when I was in school, mm-hmm. algebra was majorly hard for me. Would I have still gone to my senior year? I just would not have taken algebra with me, and I still would have had to keep taking that until I like.
You so wouldn't progress structure. Until you were ready for it under this. And under this type of learning system.
And when you say
system.
Progress, you mean to the next grade. Like you're,
you can't
still
go into
have
the next
grade,
grade. You can't
okay.
go. Right. You're going to have to stay with the wherever you are in the learning system.
Yeah. Well, to me, it makes sense. It doesn't sound like it sounds like semantics. It sounds like they're still pretty much the same system. They're just not showing it as an F. They're showing it as a. You know, different word.
Right.
And
let me just highlight what's happening specifically at these schools. Okay. Because this is why I brought this up. Los Angeles Unified School District, Oakland, Sacramento, and other districts are considering phasing out grades below a C for high school students. So if a student fails a test, now this is high school, this isn't little kids. And I see some people in the chat saying, you know, like little kids, it condemns the mind of a small child to, like Greer says, reside, then I'll never make it. I'm a failure. Which I don't agree with.
I absolutely agree with
it
that.
It condemns them to failure for the rest of their life. Like I got D's, right? If I got a D,
you
in
also
something,
have the. You have so much like. You also are a really confident and handsome person, and you had charisma as a child. And how many people do not? How many times have you heard me say, at like our teacher conferences, especially for our boy, is. Don't discourage him. Whatever is hard for him, he keeps trying, right? But young boys specifically boys, right, mm-hmm. are more prone to be discouraged in lower grades because they don't develop as fast as girls, and girls usually can sit still longer and master the subjects faster, and they start to think of themselves as failures. And then by the time they get into middle school, they're so discouraged by the academic system that they just sort of give up. I mean, there's this great book that I, Raising Cain, that I think everyone with adolescent or, you know, below boys should read. And there was this one therapist who's like, how are the boys that you're dealing with? She's like, oh, you know, the adage, got discouraged as a young child, gave up, smokes a lot of weed now. Like, so yeah. For you to say I had D's and F's and I was fine is ignoring the fact that you also have supportive parents and a good work ethic and the privilege of being charismatic and popular.
All right. Well, I mean,
don't say those things.
All right. Well, here's in the piece. With so many students languishing academically after a year of distance learning, districts are dropping D's and F's as a way to help students who had been most impacted by the pandemic, especially Black, Latino, and low-income students. So, okay, I don't know. Why not go all in then? You're going to have A, B, and C, but then you're going to get rid of D's
I have no idea why keep A, B, and C at all. That's not typically how this grading system works.
Well,
that's
my point. You're just going to get rid of the failure section of this. So
is
then
that
you better,
what it says? I thought that.
Yeah,
it,
I mean, well, then you're going honestly, back. Oh, you I didn't do like, the homework? Oh.
That's not what I.
That's a failure. You didn't read the news?
It didn't say it's keeping A, B, and C.
I'm going to give you a D for your homework on this. How does
I
that feel?
I feel like a lot of this falls on. Now, I know that the teachers are, you know, they're not paid well and all the other stuff, which is a contributing factor. But I feel like a lot of this falls on the teacher because they aren't. Like a lot of them, you know, if a kid is unruly or hype or whatever, they want to medicate them and get them on Ritalin and all this other stuff. And not really, it's like they're not really teaching them. They're not inspiring these kids to do this stuff. And I feel like manipulating the grade system is not the answer. You need to manipulate the educational process itself, like what the teachers are able to do, like pay them and take care of their resources and stuff so that they actually enjoy being a teacher. And it's not a constant struggle financially for them to have all that stress and then take that into the schools. So I feel like this is just a way to take it off of the, you know, the teachers and make it like, okay, we'll make it look better than it is.
Hmm. Perhaps, but then you will still be able to quantify who is not actually moving up in the curriculum. That's not, and I don't see anywhere in here that it says that A, B, and C will be kept.
Yeah, it's right there.
As part of the system. Show me.
It's right there in the piece.
Show me. Okay, I will talk.
Well, we can do this later. I mean, we don't need to like to derail the show.
No, I did the wrong. It's okay. Well, we have time, right?
We have time.
Everyone showed up. We should at least get it right.
Find it here.
So the way that this grading system at least works for our children is they get proficient if they've done it very well, right? It's not, and they get mastery if they're like just super good at it. They also can get not proficient or developing or not experienced with this curriculum, not exposed to it at all.
Well, here it is, right in the headline here.
Probably in Portugal, the
it just says
probably,
dropping D's and F's. I do no, and this is not a Portuguese. My kids go to an American school,
and they're phasing out grades below a C for high school students.
But that doesn't mean necessarily that they'll still get A's and B's and C's. There's a nuance here. I don't know if that's what that means.
Well, what I was getting at with my comment about Portugal is like I feel like anybody that's employed over there, they're paid better, they're taken care of more, they have health care, so they're just happier people in general that are teaching the kids. So it's like they want to be there, they want to be teaching, and I feel like a lot of schools here, they're there because it's a paycheck, and they struggle. You know what I mean? So if they're struggling, the kids are going to struggle.
I see how that carries over. I mean, stress is contagious. You know, stress and anxiety is contagious, right? And kids feel that at home when their parents are stressed about food, putting food on the table and money, mm-hmm. right? That carries over to the children. Absolutely, it does. And the same way I can imagine in a classroom that students would pick up on workplace anxiety from a teacher not making enough
money. That's my point. Yes. Is that I think that the grade structure A through F would even work over in Portugal or somewhere better, because it's not like, hey, you're no good, you're failing. They would still encourage that kid not to get them and work with them more, I feel, than a lot of schools here.
I think
it's necessarily an issue of geography, right? Because children need to be able to be plugged into, in theory, we'd have a standardized education where someone could move from an American school in Portugal to an American school in England to an actual American school in America. It doesn't really work that way. And school curriculum is set by the states, right? So it matters who you vote for. And these grading systems can be set by unified school districts. So it matters who you elect in your local school districts. But I think most educators are pretty heroic in general. I think the problem here is that when you have just a finite set of five choices, A, B, C, D, well, there's no E grades, so four choices, let's do the math properly. It's too subjective the way that like one teacher grades versus the other. At least everyone can agree someone is proficient or not at this. And you can have a team of people who then can, I mean, it sets a lot more focus on the individual child. Unfortunately, that will be more work.
I like what people are saying in the chat. There's a lot of debate about it. Some saying they agree with Natalie on this. Some saying they agree with me on this. I'm saying, look, I think there's a good.
I have not seen anybody saying they agree with me.
Well, I'll search for, there's a lot of people saying, how many people agree with me on this? I'm just saying, like, I think having grades is a good way, I think in life.
But then why is there a movement away from standardized tests?
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking. Here's Eric Hoover. He says the issue, $5 super chat, the issue is that by adjusting the grade system, is it's lowering the standards for schools. Education must be geared towards students, not curriculum.
But when the grade system is there, it incentivizes teachers to teach two grades and two tests, which does not necessarily mean better learning.
I saw somebody else in the chat say it's hard to learn. I think it was Drew. I think it scrolled by. It's very hard to learn when you're poor, or it's very hard to study when you're poor.
Okay.
I'd like you to elaborate on that.
And I can totally see what you're saying, Natalie, that would be a good system. But I feel like that system is inherently, it's just not going to work in the United States
defending a system that exists now, which also still doesn't work, right?
Right. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the system as a whole, like the whole educational system is broken. And so changing this stuff is not going to help it. It's like a Band-Aid. It's like they're yes. trying to figure out what can we do to make this better? Well, let's change the grading system. Well, that's not what it is.
Yes.
Cher Marie says, I hate the testing system. It mostly tests the teachers. My daughter and her husband are both school teachers in Ohio. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give you guys book reports then again. If you're...
here we go.
Okay. Is The Life and Death of the Great American School System by Diane Ravitch, who is known as one of the first education scientists. And she's a great sort of education historian of education is specifically, let's see if I can find the title.
What is her name?
Diane Ravitch, Ravitch. And the book is The Life and Death of the American School System. Specifically how education is not something that you can quantify. And we think that is the case. Yes, that is the book. We think that's the case because that's how it's always been done. And it disadvantages children by thinking of it as just like something you can pigeonhole. And if you think of it, students and human beings were never meant to sit in one place and have information dumped inside of their head.
Right.
We are natural apprentices. And an educational system that honors that learning as a human should be as an apprentice. That's the way that we all learn best. Whether you think you're one of those, like, you take those educational tests. You know, I took one once that said, you work best when there's music in the background or whatever, mm-hmm. which I don't. I hate music in the background when I'm concentrating on something, right? It's if we're going to take into account that all of us need sort of hands-on learning, then there's Grover. then we need an educational system that is not based on boxes in this.
Well, way. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like the biggest problem with the educational system is kids don't fit in those boxes and they want to force them in. And if they don't fit, they medicate them. And I think that's one of the biggest problems is like, if it is not catering the education for the child. Like, for instance, my niece, she did not like to wear shoes and she liked to sit under her desk and teachers would not let her do it. And it's like, that's how she learned. That's where she was comfortable. So teachers need to be more adaptive to kids in their learning processes instead of like saying, okay, if you don't fit in this box, here's Ritalin.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm encouraged at least some schools now, or a lot of schools are starting to, like our kids' school, where they rotate the time of day that certain periods happen during the day. So instead of every day the kid has math at 8 a.m., when, you know, if they're a teenager, you know that the teenage body wakes up later, right? I mean, they're just not awake. You just can't function at that time of the morning.
I remember that, 1 p.m., yeah. Man.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I'm good to go like around 10 a.m. Like, yeah, that's when I'm at my best. So if you have math every day at 8 a.m.
You are always exposed to that subject at your worst hour.
Now they rotate them. So now you might have art at 8 a.m. Monday, and Tuesday you'll have math at 8, and they rotate the time
of day. So you'll get exposed to each subject in your peak learning hour at least once a week.
Yeah. So it's an interesting debate. Let us know what you think about this in the chat. I think it's a good discussion. These states or these school systems that are dropping D's and F's from their grading system. We've got more news to get to. We're going to get to what's trending here in a moment, and we're going to talk about the collapse of the Turkish lira and why this is so important for you and how what we can learn for it in America. We've got more to get to, a lot to talk about. But first, let's tell you about our show sponsor today, our friends over at Scoremaster. Do you know that even an okay credit score can cost you $100,000 over the life of a 30-year home mortgage? That's right. That's why you should use Scoremaster before you apply for any loan, because Scoremaster can take your credit score from okay to great, and it can do it very fast. The average user adds 61 points in 20 days or less. Recent COVID surges will keep interest rates low for now, maybe through the next year. Adding 61 points to your credit score could save you thousands on a home loan, but those rates will go up soon. So before you apply, visit Scoremaster.com and add points to your credit score fast. Then you can maintain and protect your credit score with 24/7 credit monitoring and $1 million fraud insurance. It only takes minutes to enroll. See your points, get more points, and qualify for the lowest loan rates. Visit Scoremaster.com/invest. That's Scoremaster.com/invest to get started today.
All right. Well, do you want to know what happens when politicians continue to pervert natural economics? we have a textbook example playing out right in front of our very eyes in the way of Turkey. The Turkish lira has dropped 45% over the year. It is now close to 14 Turkish lira to one American US dollar. And inflation, experts are saying it's 21%, but some are saying that's even a low number. So what is exactly is going on? Well, Turkish President Erdogan has insisted on keeping interest rates low throughout the year. He thinks that this is what stimulates an economy when rules of economics tell you the exact opposite. So he has fired people who inside the government disagree with him and artificially kept interest rates low inside of Turkey. What happens when the government continues to give itself money and create more money? Inflation. That's exactly what's happening. Now, bread lines are wrapping around the block. Actually, I think block is an American word. They don't really use that.
But I mean,
in
they're,
Europe,
they're huge.
Just like wrapping around the, I don't know, around the streets. And people are struggling with the money they have that is now able to buy 20% fewer goods than it could earlier in the year. Now, protests against the government raged over the weekend, but the president refuses to take any responsibility for it. So in a national address last week, the president says, it's okay, we got this. We know where we're going.
Which is where?
I don't know what that means.
I mean, yeah. So 21%, you know, 21% inflation. Just imagine what that would look like here in the United States, by the way. I mean, just think about what a...
Well, we're a third of the way there at 6%, 6.8%.
I mean, look at these lines. You know, people just waiting to get... And so now your money has completely collapsed.
Yes.
Like your ability to buy things has completely collapsed.
This so is if why already we talk, you were struggling to pay your rent and buy groceries...
Right.
Right? Well, rent payments probably have not changed over the last year unless somebody's moved. So at least that's a fixed cost. But everything else around that is not. Your gasoline, your heating bill, any other utilities, and of course, the biggest one, your grocery bill. Now you can have 20% less food this holiday season.
Yeah. And this is what happens when you, you know, continue to try to print more money. You continue to, you know, debase your currency. I mean, so what can we learn about this in the United States? Well, it's happening right before our eyes right now in the United States.
Yes.
I mean,
so when the government starts to tell us like, hey, this is normal. It's because of the pandemic. This is just, you know, it's happening, but it's okay. Right. Well, they don't want us to look across the pond and see what happens when it continues to happen. And the government continues to tell us right now, inflation is sort of a natural result of the economy. It's not. It is absolutely the result, in my opinion, of two things: crazy government spending and crazy national debt and crazy low interest rates. Those are things the government has control over and refuses to change because they fear a market correction.
Yeah, I mean, look at these lines. I mean, just let's take a look at these lines. Just people waiting for bread in Istanbul. And, you know, it's amazing because Istanbul or, you know, Turkey was really sort of seen as a bastion of hope, of democracy in an area, a burgeoning democracy, the potential for a democracy in this area of the world, where you have all sorts of fighting and problems in other countries very, very close to this area.
Well, it's more a democratic Muslim country.
Right. But I mean, think about this, like, you know, you're waiting every day to try to get simple food for you to eat with your family. And now, what you used to pay for a baguette was what, $1.25 cheaper. Now it's at $2.50. So like
2 lira.
Yeah, you see how quickly this is jumping up in price. A former truck driver and produce wholesaler, this article says, who retired 5 years ago. He moved his children because money is tight. My retirement Social Security only brings in 800 lira a month, which is $56 a month. He says that's not even enough to live on. We're four people in a house and our rent is 2,000 lira.
Right. So these moves, right, to lower interest rates, to increase borrowing, that leaves behind a whole demographic of people who are on fixed income who are not going out to get a loan, right?
Right.
And so who's hurt the most by this is absolutely the aging population and those on fixed income.
Yeah. So even just, I mean, even just looking at some of the things that have shot up in price there in Turkey specifically, like sunflower oil jumped 137%. So think about that, right? So, you know, your money goes down in value and all of these goods are just skyrocketing.
Yes.
Toilet paper up 90%, sugar up 90%, natural gas up 102%. And, you know, and of course, inflation helps big businesses, right? It helps those at the top. And it crushes the little person.
We are awaiting more
today.
Yes.
Today is the Fed meeting. And so we're going to hear from Jerome Powell on this exact issue today. Like, where does Jerome Powell feel that inflation is heading in the United States? Are they going to throw out the term transitory finally and be honest with us about it, that it's going to last? It could last a year or even more. When are you going to start to increase interest rates? When are you going to start to raise rates so that we're not keeping these interest rates artificially low? All of this, we're going to wait today as the Fed holds its meeting for 2 days, today, Tuesday and Wednesday. So we'll have an update for you on that on the show tomorrow.
All right. Well, let's move on to what's trending. We didn't disagree on that story at all.
No.
That seemed so tame.
Yeah. I could disagree with you if you want me to, but I won't do that.
About turkey, anything?
Turkey. I ordered our Christmas turkey today.
Not related to that story, but yes, that's yes. True. Our Christmas meal is just a duplicate of Thanksgiving.
Do you only get one Christmas turkey too from the, like, you know how they only allowed you to get one or whatever?
Just the one.
We just got the one. Yeah. He asked me though, how big do you want it? And I said, well, and I told him in Portuguese, I said, eu gosto peru sandwich. So I want to eat turkey sandwiches. afterwards. And he said, okay. So we're going to slice it, So yes, he got me a slightly bigger turkey because of that issue.
Bigger? That last one was like 7 kilos.
No, not bigger than the last one, but just, he was asking if I just wanted to get a small turkey.
Did he show you pictures of them? Like, which one do you want?
No.
All right. This was hairy. This is.
Yeah. I don't want to see them. I don't want to see their names.
And, okay. All right, I'm going to tell you what's trending on the internet before we get out of here. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's get to it.
Okay. Elon Musk is trending because he was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. Yeah. I have the cover in here somewhere.
Yeah, where is that?
No, okay. It's not there.
But tell us why.
Well, I don't really know why. I mean, I guess because he put people in space, but, you know, Bezos did that too. And because he's speaking up for...
I read the article.
Environment. Okay, you
so
tell
I did
us
the
why
homework.
Then. I didn't.
So you're
I don't
telling
want to
this
read that.
I read this. So, I mean, the thing that he can move mountains with just one tweet. You know, and here's the thing with these persons of the year things, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that he's the greatest person or anything like that. It's the person that maybe influenced, had the most influence over humanity in a particular year, you know?
Okay.
So just his ability to, first of all, yeah, get people to space, but also tweet and moves entire financial markets with a tweet. Like overnight, he tweeted about Dogecoin, right? And look what happened to Dogecoin overnight, up 19%.
Yes. His fight with the states, for instance, leaving mm-hmm. California because he's pointing out sort of inequities in different business laws, things like that. So yeah. Sure. Cool. Okay. Fantastic Beasts 3 is trending because a trailer for the new movie is out. It's called The Secrets of Dumbledore. I don't know if we're allowed to play it. I gave you stills I'm not sure. That one here. So Jude Law is reprising his role as Dumbledore, but Johnny Depp will not be reprising his role as Grindelwald. He's been recast. The role will now be played by actor Mads Mikkelsen. You recognize him from James Bond.
Yeah, he's Le Chiffre.
Right. He is, I believe, a Swedish actor. We saw that movie with him in Sweden.
He is so good.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Did Johnny just not want to do it or what?
I think that maybe he's getting now the Katie Holmes treatment because he's just too strange for Hollywood, right? This is my derision, you guys. I do not know.
Yeah.
The movie comes out next April.
How do you spell his name? Mads?
M-A-D-S-M-I-K-K-E-L-S.
Yeah, he's Danish.
Oh, Danish. I'm sorry.
He was originally a gymnast and a dancer.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No, I did not. Huh.
Yeah, there was a really good movie that we watched where he was like... He was wrongfully accused of something.
Johnny?
No. Mads Mikkelsen in a movie. He was wrongly accused of something in this movie, and it was an excellent movie. I'm trying to find. I just don't want to say it because we'll get like demoted or demonetized if I mention the name of them. If I say what he was accused of, I just know that that's what they'll do. I'm just trying to find his IMDb. It's a great movie, though.
Yeah,
it's a subtitle movie.
So I'm thrilled to see him play Grindelwald. That's very exciting to me. Okay. Golden Globe nominations 2022 are trending because they were announced. Now, recall the Golden Globes had this expose in the Los Angeles Times earlier this year, and everyone says that they are they're racist, they don't make any effort to be inclusive, they're gendered, all of these things. The Golden Globes sort of responded. There were some internal documents that were leaked. So the Golden Globes are also sort of canceled, which is funny in the cancel culture to cancel an awards organization. So they are going forward with awards, but no ceremony this year. The winners will just be announced on January 9th. Here's some, I put best motion picture drama. So
I haven't seen any of these. Oh, I haven't seen Dune.
We saw Dune.
No, we didn't.
Oh, we didn't see Dune. I'm thinking of...
You guys haven't seen Dune? Oh.
No, because we want to read it first. That's what I asked Santa. I wanted to get the hardback book for Christmas. That's like my big book that I asked for Christmas. So I want to read it first before seeing it. And then, The Power of the Dog is that...
The Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, the Western movie. It's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, click over to some of the other ones.
Okay, here is actress.
I did not even know that the Ricardos movie was out.
Ricardo?
Sorry. Nicole Kidman and Javier Bardem. They both received nominations for those, so.
I actually really want to see that.
Lady Gaga.
I heard that's not very good.
What, House of Gucci?
Yeah, and I heard that she's kind of flat in it. I don't know, but.
I heard the opposite, but okay, sure. Go to the next one. Best actor.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then what else do I have? Series. Best
television
TV series. And there were also a lot of, the other ones that people are talking about. The
Ted Lasso, of course.
What's the one where you have to kill other people?
Oh, Squid Game?
That is also nominated for certain things. So anyway.
Well, Only Murderers in the Building is the Steve Martin Short show.
Yes, it is. And Selena Gomez.
Yeah, I want to see that.
So, okay. Flamin' Hot Cheetos are trending because there are rumors that Frito-Lay is discontinuing the Puffs. Chips, the snacks. The company has not commented on this rumor, so people have resorted to freaking out about it. It could just be that this is part of inflation and you can't get these products. I don't know. Finally, deleting Twitter is trending because people are desperate to avoid spoilers to the upcoming Spider-Man movie, which launches on Friday. I like this tweet where she says, deleting Twitter, see y'all on Friday. People just know. No spoilers. Early reviews out say the movie is fantastic and emotional and exciting. And that's all I'm going to say. I will not read them any further. I am only reading headlines at this point.
Yeah, the reviews so far say it's the best Spider-Man movie ever, which I am very excited about. So my son will flip out.
Have you deleted Twitter specifically for this reason?
I just don't hang out on Twitter.
I should spoil Spider-Man for you because you spoiled Sex and the City for me.
No, you better not.
That would be fair. Right?
It was in the first episode.
I'm seeing it Thursday night, so.
Oh, you better.
So you're going to have to show up to Friday's show like this.
Yeah.
Book tape.
Nothing. You can't say a word.
We're just going to mute him. Can we mute him?
Yeah.
Shelly Cali Girl says, I'm waiting. Can't wait for Spider-Man. Yes, I'm super excited. How many of you guys in the chat are going to go see it?
Have your tickets already, I hope.
Yeah.
And babysitting lined up.
Grim Skull says, hey, Spider-Man can climb walls. Did you guys know that? No, I didn't.
Way to spoil that, man. Hey, Grim Skull, thanks for following me on Goodreads. Everyone else who wants to hear me lecture about the books that I've read or share the books you're reading, please do follow me on Goodreads. It's goodreads.com/Natalie Morris.
It's just like being married to her.
It's not.
No, it's not.
They can escape, darling.
Yeah. What's that?
They can escape.
They can escape, yeah. They just get the best
they
parts.
They can turn me off.
They just get the best parts of you.
Oh, that was not. Okay, never mind. I'm not going there.
Yeah. For better and worse, whatever. Anyway, go to morninginvest.com to sign up for our newsletter. It's totally free, and you'll be more informed. And it's what all the cool kids are doing. Like, do you want to be cool like all the cool kids?
The newsletter was second place as Time's Person of the Year.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, yeah. Elon Musk was named Person of the Year, but the Morning Invest newsletter.
He beat us by one tweet.
Yeah, but the Morning Invest newsletter came in second. Maybe next year, guys. Maybe next year. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will be here tomorrow. I hope you will, too. Bring some friends, and we're always happy to see your face.
Hey, you know how you could give back here at the holidays? Share our show with someone you think would love to join us every morning here at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We're here every morning for free. And smash that like button. That's one way you can give back. How many likes do we have today? Let's see, we have 700 likes, and we had 3,000 people live. Come on, smash those likes button. Let's see if we can get it up to close to 3,000.
Smash it.
All right.
Okay, everybody. Have a good afternoon.
We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, everyone. Bye.